7 seconds.
Got it. I can follow that. Thank you. Thank you all for being, allowing me to be here, and I apologize for being late. You might know that we have the number one most congested streets in the country here, so it took me 2 hours to get here from Bethesda today. So let me start with talking, since we're in an economic forum, about our economic situation. You've probably heard a lot about it. You know a lot about it. Many people that are here go every day finding about somebody or a company that's leaving the state. We've lost over 7,000 small businesses in the last 8 years. We have 76% more people unemployed than we did 8 years ago. We're now 43rd in the country in manufacturing, 40th in tech transfer. So we have, we're great at entrepreneurship. We invent things here, and then we produce them elsewhere. We've had 40 straight taxes in a row, and so people are leaving. Baltimore, along with Buffalo, are the only NFL cities that don't have a Fortune 500 company anymore. Matter of fact, we only have four left in our state. And we're getting our clocks cleaned by our neighboring states. And it's unsustainable, and we can't continue to do it. So we need to have a governor that starts in January that actually cares about business, wants to bring business back to Maryland, wants to do it because he or she wants to bring jobs to Maryland. If we increase our tax base, if we have more jobs, if we don't have a city like Baltimore where 46% of the adult males are out of work, then people are going to be making money. They're going to be contributing to the tax base. We're going to be able to do things like transportation projects, get rid of the number two minority achievement gap that we have in the whole United States right here in Maryland, be able to make sure the kids can go to higher education, can go to school, stay in school, make sure we don't have the public safety concerns that we have now, where we're the fourth most homicides in the country, ninth most violent state in the country, and our Chesapeake Bay is dying. So we need somebody with new ideas. I'm the only person in the race on the Democratic side who's actually run anything and managed people. I've been doing it the last 16 years as state's attorney and attorney general, balancing budgets, getting things done, seeing things that are unfair and actually fixing them. I guess he hasn't raised the thing yet, so I'll give you an example between me and I think the difference between my leadership style and my opponent's. He was given, the first thing he's been ever given to do was to run the Affordable Care Act website. It's been over $200 million of taxpayer money down the drain. Real people can't get chemotherapy. Real people can't get their heart disease taken care of. And real people can't get their children and grandchildren access to health care. By contrast, I was elected by the 50 attorneys general in the country to be the head of the National Association of Attorneys General. When I was there, we had a problem with the mortgages here in Maryland and foreclosures. People were getting thrown out of their houses and put it on the streets. So I engineered an agreement with the five major banks, and to this minute, we've gotten $1.5 billion into Maryland to keep tens of thousands of people in their homes and away from being off the streets, and it's helped turn our housing market around and helped turn our economy around. We did it not by saying I did it and put it on my website, but by actually going to the meetings, meeting with the CEO of Bank of America, going to Charlotte, going to Chicago, having meetings to get it done. So look forward to the, five questions? I look forward to the five questions that are coming up.
Okay. We're going to start with Senator Don Fry, who's president of the Greater Baltimore Committee. They make us call him Senator.
I'm aware of his pedigree. Thank you.
Mr. General, thank you. Good seeing you. The governor often sets the tone for his or her administration at the very beginning of their term of office. What would the first 100 days of a Governor Gansler administration look like?
You know, I think it's particularly relevant to this particular forum. I really believe that this jobs thing is a huge problem. I mean, if you look in Baltimore City today, you have, two cranes in the air down the street. In Washington, there's 53. Philadelphia's been able to turn itself around. D.C.'s been able to turn itself around. Our neighboring states are taking all our jobs. You know, we haven't had a comprehensive review of our economic situation and our tax policy that goes along with it in decades. And so I think we need to make sure that we become competitive with our neighbors and a number of ways of doing that. I mean, there's a few sort of side issues that are associated with that. For example, one of the things I want to do is focus on this issue of reentry, where in Baltimore, one of the reasons why I have such a crime problem is we have 46% of the people coming out of jail reoffend within 3 years and go back to jail. 59% of the people coming out of jail come into Baltimore City. We spend $1.3 billion on this, and other states have looked into the reentry issue. Michigan, Oregon, Virginia, and gotten their numbers down from 46% into the 20s. Michigan was able to close 20 correctional facilities and take people from being $33,000 a year inmates behind bars to tax-paying citizens. So I think that's one of the areas. Another that we're going to look at is when you have to stay in school through 18. When you're 16, if you satisfy your requirements, you get a certificate of mastery. But some people just don't want to go on to Towson. They want to get a job. So in the morning, they'll do their English and their math. And in the afternoon, they'll do vocational or career apprenticeships. So, for example, let's say they want to be an electrician. It takes 10,000 hours to get accredited. So you'll do that in the afternoons. So at 18, you graduate with your high school diploma and certification for a job. We'll be looking at focusing on the two areas that we're uniquely qualified in, life sciences and cybersecurity. We're the only state in the country that has NIH. We're the only state in the country that has Johns Hopkins, number one hospital in the country the last 21 out of 22 years, and the University of Maryland Medical System. Likewise, we're the only state that has the NSA and the Cyber Command Center, plus we have the smartest people in the country, so we can focus on those two industries.
Thank you. Next question from the president of SunTrust Bank, Baltimore and Annapolis, Sam DiPaolo.
Hello, Attorney General. Maryland often ranks high for research and development, and that is essentially research dollars as a share of state GDP. But we often rank low in terms of entrepreneurship, which is measured by actual new business starts. In a recovering economy, firms less than 5 years old typically create a disproportionately large number of new jobs as compared to existing companies. How do you plan to encourage technology transfer from government contractors how do you plan to encourage technology transfer and also local entrepreneurship?
So you're right. We rank high. In fact, we rank number one. We have the most research dollars in the country coming into Maryland, yet, to your point about tech transfer, we're 40th in the country in tech transfer. So depending on how you define entrepreneurship, we're actually, some people do, my opponent does, says we're number one in entrepreneurship, which is true. So all of these wonderful ideas are patented, conceived of, thought of here as a result of the money that comes in. The problem is they're then produced elsewhere in some other state. And so the jobs aren't created here. So we need to focus on tech transfer. Actually, UMBC, Dr. Hrabowski, has done a great job of that. But the other schools need to do it as well, particularly academic institutions. I'm a huge Hopkins fan, not just the lacrosse team, but the school. But their entrepreneurial thought process needs to evolve a little bit more as well to really understand that we need to build around the schools, build around the medical facilities, build around the military installations that we have, so we have incubators and support both the incubator period, but actually beyond that as well. So one of the things we have a problem, and we have a lot of issues here, and you know the GBC knows about these, and all of you know about these. But one of the problems is when you're successful, the money dries up, and the banks know that as well. And so the companies that have survived 5, 6, 7 years. They should also have access to cap. I think one of the things we need to do is have a governor that thinks it's a problem, that people are leaving and the companies are leaving. And one of the things I want to do is to get the CEOs of companies, to get the Alan Wilsons, to get the Kevin Planks and 15, 20 people on a governor's business council to go out to other places when companies are looking to come to this area. And there's a lot of reasons why they want to come here. One is the federal government. And say, you tell us what you need. What are your needs? As opposed to what goes on now with us versus Virginia, where they do that, and we just say we're open for business, and that's the end of the conversation.
Good. Thank you. Next question is from Scott Dorsey, Chairman of Merit Properties. Scott?
My question is about the fiscal challenges the state's facing. When the current administration came in about 7.5 years ago, we were looking at a $29 billion budget. I think the newest budget is $39 billion. And that's a huge increase. I don't care how you slice it. Now, for more than a decade, we've addressed this persistent structural deficit by borrowing special funds intended for transportation and open space and shifting it to the general fund, converting operating expenses to long-term bond debt. Now, is this a practice that you would continue? And if not, how would you address what has become a perennial structural deficit?
Well, it's a great question because I remember sitting there listening to them say that they reduced the size of government and thinking, How can you say that when you came in, it was a $29 billion budget, now it's a $39 billion budget, but the budget's been reduced. The numbers belie that. And to your question about the trust and the Transportation Trust and the open space, I think there's been a real violation of the public trust. I mean, I think it was the 40th of the taxes was the gas tax. And the reason how that came to be was because they emptied the Transportation Trust Fund and said, oh, my God, there's no money left in the Transportation Trust Fund. Let's tax working people and people that drive to their work. And so an extra $10, every time they fill up their tank at 23 cents a gallon, they'll be able to handle that. Well, that's actually more than minimum wage. So that's an hour's of work they just got for that extra tax. So I think there's a real problem in terms of dedicated funds. I think when you say you're going to use money for a certain purpose, I think you ought to do that. And so I think we have to really sort of take a comprehensive view of how we spend and how we tax. So I want to do a full thing on that. Right now, what these guys want to do, and I'm running, look, we all know, I'm running against the machine. I'm mortgage our economic future on the back of more taxes and casino gambling, or actually bringing jobs back and keeping people working in life sciences, cybersecurity, manufacturing, and tech transfer in other areas. I vote for door number two. We have such unique advantages here. I mean, we don't even begin to take advantage of the port. You know, we have one of the two deep sea ports we have in the country right here, the Port of Baltimore. It can be expanded. BWI is expanding and the international capabilities of that. With 68 and I-95 and the highways right here, we have the ability to go out west and through rail. So we have an advantage here that no other state has, and we need to start taking advantage of it.
Good. Thank you. Next question from Jerry Witt, who is the chairman of the Maryland Business for Responsible Government.
And this is a question about Baltimore City, and you being from Montgomery County, I think people are curious as to how you would propose to bring people back to Baltimore City and improve the Baltimore region. That's our strong urban hub in the state of Maryland and needs a lot of help. And what would you do to help Baltimore City?
Well, Joe, I'm the Baltimore candidate, right? You see, I work here every day. I was an Orioles season ticket holder before either of my opponents had stepped foot in Maryland. So I'm the Baltimore guy, and my lieutenant governor, Jolene Ivey, actually went to school here at Towson and worked in Baltimore, and her husband, Glenn Ivey, was the state's attorney in Prince George, has also worked here for years. But I've been coming up here every day, for the last 8 years as the attorney general and seeing the problems. And really find it tragic because Baltimore is such a incredible, it's just bursting with potential, yet it's been unrealized. And so there's a number of things we need to do, and there's no panacea to it, obviously. But one of the big things I want to do is really look at high-speed rail from Baltimore to Washington. You know, if you look at the transportation, the traffic that's out there, people going, we say we don't want to be dependent on the federal government. We are dependent on the federal government. It may grow and get smaller, and there may be sequestration, but we're reliant on it. And right now, people live in Germantown and beyond, in Frederick, and deep into Prince George's, and commute an hour and a half, 2 hours. Can you imagine if you could get from Baltimore City to D.C., and depending on what type of high-speed rail you have, 12, 18, 20 minutes time, I think that would bring people back into the city, make it a cool city once again. Making the schools a place, look, I just was at a forum, the one I was at before this, and I said, if you think that Baltimore City public schools are the number one schools in the country, if that's where you think, I want you to vote for my opponent and get all your friends to. But it's clearly they're not. I mean, it's sad, and it's wrong, and it's unfair what goes on in the public schools here. And, 94% of the kids won't graduate from college, almost half won't graduate from high school, and the ones that do need remedial education, it's unsustainable. And then the crime. There's no reason why we should have over 300 murders a year in Baltimore City, no matter how they count them and change the way they count murders each year. But it's crazy. I mean, no other cities haven't done this. Other cities have improved the crime rate. So if you have crime down, you have schools that you can send your kids to, you have transportation, I think those, and job availability, I think that's you'll get people to come back in.
Good. Now, I can't say we saved the best for last, but she's our cleanup hitter, Dr. Maravine Leschke, president of Towson University.
I've met her.
Yes. Okay.
Good.
For the past 8 years, Maryland's higher education system has received increased investment from the governor and the General Assembly. And during that same time, other states, surrounding states, have experienced a great deal of cutting and massive tuition increases, and yet Maryland continued to provide support for higher education. So my question specifically is, understanding completely that we all care about accessibility and affordability, what kind of steps would you take or ideas do you have that would secure the quality of our higher education?
Yeah, and there's a lot of – well, one of the things I've done actually as Attorney General, I started the first Civil Rights Division in the state history, and we looked at the minority achievement gap in higher education. And we wrote a report that I took national about how to make sure we increase diversity in terms of financial aid, teacher-faculty ratios, student body, and programs as well. And I think that, to me, the diversity of our state is our strength. And we actually integrate it quite well. We work together very well for the most part. I think we needed to be able to do that at higher education. There's been a big premium on keeping the cost of schools down, the tuition down, and I think that's admirable. But I'm much more focused on the fact that, particularly in the Baltimore area, the public schools, all of them have less than a 50% graduation rate in 4 years. Towson being the gold standard at 42%, UMBC 33%, I think Coppin is 5%, and UB is 8% in 4 years. So we need to give incentives for people to graduate in 4 years. We need to give tuition breaks to people that are willing to go into the areas their needs, nursing, cybersecurity, obviously. The cybersecurity and life sciences, we talk about because we're uniquely situated in those two fields, but there's also endless potential in those two fields here in Maryland as we look into the future. One of the things I want to look at is not necessarily going to the University of California system, but looking at how that is a possible, looking at that in terms of the tuition. You know, I went to Yale. My wife went to Harvard. Both of those schools have need-blind admission. They're colleges. And they need blind admission. So they're less focused on what the tuition costs, because there's a lot of people that can afford it, and more focused on getting people in that should be there and then making sure they can stay there. And so, you know, in my class at Yale, 70% of the kids were in financial aid. Some were in full, and most were in partial. I think we ought to be able to look at that here, because so many kids can't get through the 4 years because of financial constraints, and I think we ought to look at that. If a school can do it, a state can do it.
Now, we've allotted 2 minutes for closing remarks, Attorney General.
Okay, so closing remarks. I'm sort of closing because we have 70-some-odd days to the election. It's a single-digit race at this point. It didn't used to be. It is now. About 63% of the people are undecided, 40% undecided, and 23% soft, so it's a completely open race. And I think there's a real opportunity and a real opportunity for change. We have somebody who has a deep record of accomplishment, somebody who's been in public service for 22 years, seeing problems, seeing things that aren't fair, and actually working hard and getting them done and fixing them. However you look at it, the sniper case as a state's attorney and trying my own cases and getting diversity in the office and winning our cases, coming to the Attorney General's office and changing the culture there as well, and bringing back over $2 billion to the consumers of Maryland, over $300 million to the state since I've been there. And then with a vision for the future, not the status quo, not the establishment, making a change. So I think there's a real opportunity here. Most people don't even know there's an election coming up. Some of you do since you're here, and I appreciate that. But it's, you know, I'm going to keep working. I knock on doors every day. I hear from the people that are out there. They want the 40 taxes in a row is killing them. And the economic viability of the state is going down. You know, when they took the pension money out from the $300 million and reduced it to $200 million, it puts our AAA bond rating in jeopardy. And we need to focus on Baltimore and the Baltimore area. We haven't had that, and we need that, because this is a city that wants to blossom and wants to bloom and has the people and the resources and the energy and the desire to do it. We just need a governor that knows it, a governor who can find Pratt Street without a map, much less going to the neighborhoods and working on in the city of Baltimore. So I'm excited about it. Thank you for doing this. Thanks for caring enough to do this. This election matters. I'm not going to say it's the most important election in the world, like you hear people that get into politics say, but it does matter, because it really matters for the future of the state and how we how we are able to bring jobs back and help the people that want to work and working families and the students and what your future looks like. So, again, thanks for the opportunity to be here, and I appreciate, Bob, for you putting this on.
Thank you.
Thanks.